Listen and stream the only talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
Up next, we have your Lunchtime Doctor, the return of the Lunchtime Doctor. And of course, yours truly, Bass, is back. We say welcome, Dr. Sophia Mohammed. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Bass, and good afternoon to all those tuned in for the next hour, locked in right here to your Lunchtime Doctor. I am Dr. Sophia Mohammed, here to help you dissect those medical challenges. Let's see how we can analyze those questions and give you some sort of direction. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about World Asthma Day, which is today. And of course, we're going to continue that conversation. The lines are open for you to send your calls in, send your concerns, and of course, share with us what's on your lunchtime plate. What health habits are you learning from this program and sharing with your loved ones? Over to you, Bass, for the numbers.
Yes, folks, and the numbers, as always, 627-3223. That's 627-3223. 625-2257. Those are the numbers to call. And of course, for WhatsApps, only 306-1065. Feel free to message our other networks and they will forward your messages straight to our WhatsApp.
So today is World Asthma Day. What does that mean? As you all know, we do commemorate or we do recognize the different health days, but every day should be a day to consider our health. Why? Because every day we breathe, every day our heart beats, every day we use our feet to walk and move around. So every day is a day to be mindful of our health. But why is asthma this important? Do you all know that something like over 400,000 people, unfortunately, lose their lives annually, as in every year, because of the severe effects of asthma? And that's why in your Guardian Health Plus, we not only look to the triggers, we look to the signs and symptoms, and we also give you a management plan that you could cut out and keep at home from American Lung Association, and some asthma basics that can help you guide the course.
All right, doctor, what exactly causes an asthma attack? What would cause an asthma attack?
Now, when it comes to what causes, first and foremost, we need to understand how the cells, or how does the respiratory system work. So we're thinking from the nostrils, the pathway that connects down to your trachea and then bifurcates into the lungs. So that pathway, think of it like a pipe, and it's lined with different cells, your bronchioles. However, when there's any sort of narrowing, be it by an inflammatory reaction or mucus in the pipe, which is the pathway for your airways, then the air isn't able to exchange and move through the respiratory system. What causes it? It could be a host of things, but that narrowing or the inflammatory condition of the cells is what essentially is the effect, or what asthma really is. It may then trigger a cough. It may trigger a wheeze. It may trigger shortness of breath. And those are some of the worsening signs and symptoms.
All right. Another question here about asthma. Is asthma hereditary?
Right. So yes, there is genetic links, as in if your parent is asthmatic, there is a possibility of it, but it's not as, say, strong as in some cancers. Asthma tends to be more along the lines of an environmental trigger, or the allergic conditions tend to be hereditary.
All right. A question coming in here. Remember, folks, your questions are 306-1065 on the WhatsApps, and the numbers to call 627-3223, 625-2257. You're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor. Doctor, I've been getting this pulling constant left side headache and feel this sensation along the left side of my neck and mouth. I had COVID really bad and could have lost my life in 2021. What is your advice?
Okay, so what we've seen with post-COVID patients, I'm glad that you're recovering and I'm glad you're recuperating from post-COVID, but because of the cytokines as the chemical modulators and it affecting different organs, we've seen persons post-COVID because of the virus itself, it affecting the heart. That pain on the left side of your chin, left side of the face, radiating down to the left hand is not something I would take lightly. Please get that checked right away. Not only looking at the cardiovascular system as in an ECG, but also looking at the pulmonary function tests. You want to check and see post-COVID, what does your pulmonary function exchange look like? Some persons still had deposits within their lungs and that showed up in the x-ray. So let's keep in mind, post-COVID, we make sure we do a proper check. And in this case, where you're feeling that pain on the left side, remember, left-sided chest pain or even at the jaw, move left arm, equates cardiovascular pain of a heart attack. Please get that checked out right away.
All right, another question here. I get a hemorrhoid almost every day after using the bathroom or if I stoop down for more than a minute. What can be causing this and how can I reduce it?
So hemorrhoids tend to be from either trauma or some sort of damage to the perianal canal, perianal area in particular. And there's several things you can do to ease it up. But first and foremost, let's understand it. Hemorrhoids are actually small little veins that become swollen. So here's some of the circumstances that can cause hemorrhoids. After a female have a delivery, after a pregnancy, say she may have had a difficult pregnancy and difficult bearing down, that increased pressure on the perianal area can cause these swollen veins and that may lead to a hemorrhoid. Sometimes we even see hemorrhoids in those who are lifting heavy weights or not bending properly. What can you do? First and foremost, that hemorrhoid is a point of infection and a point of bleeding. So we need to soothe the area, we need to treat the area, we need to prevent the bleeding. Topical medications, yes, you will certainly need to see a doctor. And yes, all my patients, every single one who's had a hemorrhoid, there's always a level of embarrassment, but no, us as doctors have seen it all. Really, we've seen it all. You please don't be embarrassed about it. Let your healthcare professional guide the process. There is topical treatments that can be placed to reduce and relieve the symptoms of hemorrhoids. One of the main things that patients do at home is they do something called a sitz bath, where a specific amount of that Epsom salt is added to a bath where they sit into, and literally there's a soak. So that salt, the area, also serves like an anti-inflammatory. There's certain, like I said, topical treatments that can be used to ease the irritation, ease the pain, ease the swelling. And if you're sitting at a desk for a long time or traveling or driving, there's what we call the donut. So it's literally like a donut, but it's a blown up cushion that you can sit on just to give that area a little bit of relief. Hope those suggestions help, but please see your healthcare professional and get it sorted out sooner rather than later.
All right, we are getting a call here, 627-3223-625-2257. Once again, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, folks, on Freedom 106.5 FM Sangeet, 106.1 Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105.1 FM. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes?
Hi, Doctor. What do you think about adding a bit of baking soda and salt, pink salt, just a tip to drinking water? I'm using that. I think like your body's supposed to absorb it better instead of just going to the washroom every time you drink water. You don't go as often when you drink it like that. What do you think? Is that safe? I'll listen off here.
So thank you so much for asking. I like the description, a little bit of baking soda, a little tip of salt. Sounds like my grandma, the way she cooks her food and the way they add the different recipes. There's no specific amount, but a tip of. But here's the thing. water itself is enough. That's all the hydration you would need, water. If you want to switch it up, you can add coconut water instead. I'm not a fan of adding salt to any additional water, regardless of if you think, yes, the body does need certain salt substitutes and salt constituents, but you will get it in the food that you're eating. So please, let's not add any more salt. Water in itself is fine. There's some persons, however, who absolutely cannot stand the flavor of normal water. I get that. No problem. Here's what you can do. And making your own flavored water at home. I'm not sure if you're diabetic or hypertensive, but keep in mind, some of these flavorings can increase the sugar. What I do specifically is I cut little pieces of watermelon, add it into some ice cubes, freeze that. I then add that to my water. So that's small, very, like 1 tablespoon of watermelon. So it's a small glycemic index. That flavors the water. You can add touches of 1 or 2 drops of lemon juice to your water to flavor. So there are other things you can do to flavor the water. You can add rosemary as well. You can even add turmeric. But let's not go to add salt to the water, because that will just increase your salt intake. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's go to the WhatsApps here. Hello, Dr. Nbase. I'm a 47-year-old woman. On my last visit to the doctor, my blood pressure was elevated for the first time in my life. I want to start tracking my pressure daily. When is the best time to check my pressure to get an accurate reading? Morning, afternoon, or before or after meals? Thank you.
Excellent question, and I'm so glad you're taking a data-centric approach. So best time to track your blood pressure. Blood pressure shouldn't be around meals time. That is more for your diabetic patient. Take the blood pressure first thing in the morning, and then also take the blood pressure last thing in the night. Some days, if you're journaling it, you can take it in the mornings and then the other days in the night. And that will give you a good idea of how your morning type blood pressure is. That is blood pressure at rest, and then blood pressure towards the afternoon after the entire day events. I'm glad you are taking this seriously, because elevated blood pressure, hypertension can lead to stroke, can lead to thrombosis, deep vein thrombosis, clots in the legs, clots in the lung, and of course, the most deadly of them all, clots in the heart, which is a heart attack. So let's make sure we do the right thing, and I'm so glad you're taking that approach.
All right. Doctor, I'm having bleeding when I use the washroom. I had a hysterectomy many years ago. What can be the cause?
So I'm not too sure if the bleeding is from the front passage or the back, but possibly, the way you described it, it may be the front passage. In light of the fact that you already had a hysterectomy, that would be the removal of the reproductive parts of the anatomy, so the uterus, the endometrium, etc. But the cervix is definitely still left inside. The bleeding could be from the cervical lining. Any sort of abnormal bleeding needs to be checked right away, because it's not normal. Bleeding on the whole, especially post-hysterectomy, is one that we must check, because we must rule out the sinister causes. Hope that answers your question.
And good afternoon to the doctor. And you base, can you, the doctor, tell me, what can you do to dissolve gallstones?
So we talked quite a bit about gallstones, and it's so important that we know first and foremost how to prevent it, more so than dissolving it. We will touch on how to actually have those gallstones reduce in the size, but gallstones happens when there's a high amount of processed foods in the body, when there isn't enough fiber, and when there isn't enough hydration. So anytime you start to increase in your fruits, vegetables, fiber, you're going to have a reduction in your gallstones, first and foremost. What you can do is so crucial that an ultrasound of the gallbladder is done. So you not only know the location of the gallstones, but you know where they are lodged and the size of the gallstone. Because if it's lodged inside the gallbladder or if it's lodged in the duct, it can cause complications to the liver. It can cause complications to the entire digestive system. So it's important that first and foremost, you know how to prevent it. Do the ultrasound so we know the location. And then, of course, treatment. Treatment is indeed by medical treatment. And then there can be surgical treatment where we actually go in and laser the gallstones. Or if the gallbladder becomes infected, then we need to do a gallbladder removal. Again, be guided by your healthcare professional based on what the situation is.
All right, folks, of course, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, 627-3223, 625-2257. I know we didn't get into Doctor a little in a short while. We will get into what's in our Health Plus for today. Of course, afternoon, Doctor, why is one's blood sugar level over 110, even though not having any sugar or carbs? Only sugar form is from fruit to add, and the reading is taken after fasting over 12 hours. Also, readings are lower with one machine and higher with another.
Okay, so let's deal with the last question first. Yes, different machines have different measures and require different amount of blood. So if the concentration of the blood, or if it's not sufficient, it may be an inaccurate reading. So that's a quality control issue. Let's jump into the first question. You said, how come the blood sugar level can still read high even after having fruits or healthy vegetables? Because fruits and vegetables do have a sugar or a glycemic index. We actually talked about this, as in, say, bananas, green bananas versus very ripened bananas. Ripened bananas have a higher glycemic index. Some fruits like pineapples, very high glycemic index. Watermelon as well, high glycemic index. Some fruits, obviously, citrus fruits, lower glycemic index. So it really depends on the portion size and what is. So that's something, you know, everyone likes to jump into Dr. Google. Google the glycemic index of fruits and you will see which fruits has a higher sugar content. Keep in mind that you can actually not have anything to eat and still have a higher level of sugar in your circulating blood, because the body does something called ketosis. In starvation, if you haven't had something, the body must produce glucose to supply to the cells. So it breaks down certain constituents to provide that glucose to the body. And that's why it's so important that we tell our diabetic patients to have small meals throughout the day. Because if the body starts to break down the glucose, then they can have a glucose spike. But in the small meals throughout the day, then there's like a constant infusion of glucose that the body can use, break down. Throughout the day. Hope that answers your question.
All right. Good day, Doctor. What causes lower back pain and the entire left leg? I guess they mean lower back pain and pain in the entire left leg as well.
Right. So that most likely could be sciatica. Any pain that's radiating from the back, that going down to the leg, most likely is sciatica. There are several reasons, from osteoarthritis, arthritic reasons, to spinal cord stenosis, which can be quite debilitating, or even a slipped disc. And that's why it's so. And you all know, there are some things that I tell you all are red flags. Pain is one of those red flags. Pain will only get worse. But here's what we do. We deprioritize, we ignore until it becomes pain level 12 out of 10, and then we take it on. But by that time, there may be damage to the nerves. There may be worsened inflammatory conditions. So present to the healthcare professional when it's like pain level 3-4, so you can treat it earlier rather than later. Hope that answers the question.
All right. I saw this question was asked yesterday. Maybe they didn't get through. Oh, yeah, maybe it was sent late. All right, so good day, Doc. I keep getting a noise in my ear like a puff or knocking noise. What can I do to stop it? It happens more at night.
So that noise in the air tends to be what we call a tinnitus, right? There can also be some sort of middle ear infection. What can you do to stop it? It definitely needs to be treated. That tinnitus could lead to a ringing of the ear. It could lead to discomfort. It could also lead to ear pain. Antibiotics can treat that and resolve that pain.
All right. And as we're on the topic of the ear here, there's a question, Doctor. What causes earwax and how do some people get more wax than others?
So that, you know, there's so much discussion on earwax, whether it should be removed, whether it shouldn't be removed. Obviously, let's not remove the earwax. The body does that on its own. What causes one person to have more than the other? It really depends on the body's response to certain triggers. If there is, earwax is actually a protecting mechanism to prevent dust, particles, mites from entering the body. And the wax itself prevents that. It almost creates like a mucus plug. So if there is a buildup of those, either the dust or the mites, any sort of things that affect the body's defenses, then obviously that earwax or cerumen will build up. It actually layer off the skin of the ear in really protecting your ear canal. If there is indeed that wax buildup, it's important that you allow, you don't use your air cleaner or air or Q-tip to clean the air. Sometimes just a drop of coconut oil or normal, just using a cloth with water can gently clean the outer surface and remove unnecessary wax.
All right. Good to know. Okay, once again, folks, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. It's 12:30, 627-3223. Let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. In the morning, my blood pressure was 150 over 88, and the heart rate was 54. And at this time now, the pressure is 116 over 75, and the heart rate is 78. What I notice now is that the antibody dripping. When I walk in, the body dripping, and the chest, as the heart rate increases, there's chest pain like.
I'm so sorry you're experiencing chest pain. No, 115. I wasn't hearing if you said 150 or 115 on 75. Normal blood pressure readings tend to be within that 110 to 120 as your systolic, over 70 to 80 as the diastolic. If it borders on that 150, that's definitely elevated and you need to get checked out. But if you said and you shared that you're feeling the body feeling weak, fatigued, you described it as drifting, that could be something more sinister, severe. So please, first and foremost, take your medication, ensure that you're hydrated, you've had a meal, and let a caregiver or some loved one take you to a healthcare professional. Hope that answers the question.
All right, lots of WhatsApps coming in here. G'day, doctor. My husband has stage 4 prostate cancer. He urinates every 20 to 25 minutes. Is there anything to help?
So yes, with stage 4 prostate cancer, there would be a lot of complications. There's that growth that's now pressing on the bladder. But there are medications that can help ease that symptom in particular. I'm sure the urologist is definitely the one to prescribe because they will know the size of the growth, one, what the next steps are in terms of if surgery was applied or not applied. In some cases, there is a watch and wait until it is safe for the body to proceed with that surgery. There is medication to help ease or reduce that retention of urine and increase frequency of urine. But again, let's have the conversation with the healthcare professional because they will have all of your health information.
Lunchtime doctor, let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Excellent job, doctor. Doctor, my granddaughter's baby is 4.5 months old and he's on a particular formula. But what happens is he is 18 pounds as well, solid. But what I'm wondering is, should he be added cereal to his milk point in time?
Great question. Thank you, Grandma. You know, the grandmas are the ones that really take care of the babies and toddlers at this stage. Thank you for your input. So at 4.5 months, I'm glad that you're concerned about moving or weaning the feeds that baby's having. Yes, cereal can be added, but I would leave that till about 6 months. However, from even as young as 3 months, one can start small amounts of pureed food. Now is a perfect time. So let's say you boil some cauliflower and puree that, or pumpkin and puree that, potatoes and puree that. Now is a perfect time to start to introduce pureed foods to baby's diet once baby is after 3 months. Thank you so much for asking that question.
Well, let's take another call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchtime, Doctor.
Yeah, good afternoon, based on special good afternoon day, Doctor. Doc, I have, I'm almost 70 years old, but I have these, I don't know what's the correct name for it. It's not a mole, but a little growth under my arms, especially armpit. A little skin growth like. You know what? Like the head of it would be like a mole, but it's a thin piece of skin attached to the under my arm, and you know it's spreading like, you know, and thing. I don't know if you could give me some advice on that.
So yes, I'm very familiar with what you're talking about. It looks like a mole that developed some fingers, and now it's growing a little bit. And then they can have multiple pieces of these little fimbri just under the arm. So one, they are not cancerous. I would suggest you try your best not to touch them. What some persons do is they try to cut it, they try to shift it around because it becomes a little bothersome. Try your best to not allow it to become infected, because if it becomes infected, then you certainly need to have that treated. It is most likely not cancerous. However, if you're noticing several growths under the armpit, across the skin, other areas, and then there's a history in your family of abnormal skin cells or skin cancer, then please get that checked out. So know the family history. If there is a history of skin cancer, then certainly let's get that checked out. But other than that, it's not a malignant or it's not a cancerous growth. Hope that answers your question.
All right, folks. Once again, feel free, if you're listening to our other frequencies, you could send your WhatsApp messages to 306-1065 or send your questions to our other frequencies and they will forward it us here at Freedom 106.5. All right, here's somebody who's self-diagnosing here. My wife is experiencing a lot of pain on the inside of her right side, right? She is thinking about removing her ovaries. So I guess you could give them some advice.
So I'm glad that they're moving towards some sort of solution. That's good, solution-based. However, pain within the abdomen could be digestive tract, it could be endocrine, it could be reproductive, it could be metabolic. So first and foremost, before we know what to do, we need to do one or two little investigations. We'd probably need that ultrasound of the abdomen. We'd need to do a little bit more of a history, examine, know where the pain coming from, know what is the source of the pain, what triggering the pain, and then lead to if we need to take out the ovaries. That's not something we consider likely at all, because it affects the hormonal balance within a woman depending on her age. So let's start with identifying where the pain is, presenting to the healthcare professional, let them do their examinations and the investigations, and then next process would be that treatment. Hope that answers your question.
All right, Doctor, what do you recommend for someone with sleeping problems?
So insomnia is something that many persons have. As always, you all know I talk about identifying the triggers, because the sleeping issue, insomnia, could be stress related. It could be anxiety related, or it could be something anatomical as obstructive sleep apnea. And those are the ones that snore quite a bit. They may have sleep with their mouth open. They may feel a dry mouth in the morning. And that can be treated first and foremost by identifying or confirming if it's obstructive sleep apnea and then moving towards the treatment. It may be the adenoids enlarged, it may be the thyroids, it may be, of course, the respiratory tract is affected. So let's find the reason for the insomnia. Like I said, it could be cognitive, it could be emotional, mental health, or it could be anatomical. Let's find the reason for it and then move to the treatment.
All right. Good afternoon, doctor. A quarterly blood test showed a UTI. There were no prior symptoms indicating a UTI. And are there any other unknown symptoms one can look out for? Thank you.
So UTI, as in urinary tract infection, I find that very odd that there were no symptoms. Usually that presents with either urgency to pass urine, a lot of pain in passing urine, or blood in the urine, or specks of blood in the urine. I'm glad that it was identified and being treated. The other symptoms we just mentioned, ensure that proper hygiene in terms of cleaning methods is continued, because that tends to be one of the foremost concerns when it comes to UTI, and making sure you're well hydrated. Most persons who tend to really deprive their body of hydration then present with a concentrated urine, and then that then develops into a UTI. So let's, again, as always, prevent the inevitable.
Okay, doctor. Hi, good afternoon. Could you explain exactly what is really a panic attack? Does it mean someone has a heart problem, even though an echogram proved normal? Also, what further tests should be done to check if there's any blocked arteries?
Okay, so thank you so much for asking a very, very important question. And that echogram, if it's done and already said there's no cardiovascular blocks, then the panic attack is not related to the blocks or any sort of heart condition. In this case, it's an emotional or anxiety base. And you know, after Friday, so many persons would have contacted me on Friday evening, Saturday, even Sunday, before they send their child back to school. So many persons had panic attacks and trauma base. That tends to be a panic attack, tends to be like a sudden episode of intense fear, and it actually triggers severe physical reaction. So there can be, it's an emotional response that produces a somatic, a body reaction. That body reaction could be the heart rate going up, sweating, nervousness presented by vomiting, or that uneasy feeling. You may even be sleeping and wake up with this panic attack, but it's most times because of some sort of trauma or fear. What can you do is, as we talked about, identifying the trigger. Sometimes you need to just talk about it. In talking about it, you unravel the fears, you unravel the anxiety. If it's not easing, if it's affecting your sleep, if it's affecting your daily conditions, then therapy can be amplified or accentuated by medications. But most times, therapy helps identify the stress or the triggers, and that way you can be in, what to say, you can also be equipped with coping mechanisms. That Friday was so traumatizing for many persons. Even up to Saturday, persons were still having panic attacks. And we actually, on the phone, sometimes I had to go through breathing exercises, having to go through just mindfulness exercises to help persons center, ground, allow their logic to prevail over a fear-based reaction. I hope that answers your question. Understand that you're not alone in these panic attacks, and there's a lot of hope and treatment out there.
All right, let's take this call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Good afternoon, Doc. I'm a diabetic. I'm hypertensive. I recently had shingles.
Mm-hmm.
I visited a doctor and I took treatment for 3-4 weeks. But now that it's gone, the spot is itching. And below the skin is very painful. I cannot touch like under my arm and my breast area. Real pain. What should I do for this pain, though?
Okay. I'm so sorry. You're experiencing this. Yes, shingles is quite painful even after finishing the course of antivirals that the healthcare professional would have placed you on. First and foremost, I want you to understand, shingles is very similar to chickenpox. So the same exact treatment that we use for chickenpox is what we use for shingles. In fact, it's the same exact virus that causes it. So those topical creams, calamine lotion that help eases the skin, that pain on the skin will also help with shingles. There may be certain specific moisturizers or cream that the healthcare professional would look at it and prescribe that will help ease the pain. But any sort of soothing lotion like that calamine will help ease the burning sensation of it. It's also important that you can utilize an over-the-counter pain medications or the ones prescribed by your doctor to help ease that pain throughout. Vitamin B, the B1, B6, B12, all of those help support the neurovascular system, and that certainly is something you can incorporate in your regime. Hope that answers your question.
All right, good afternoon, Dr. Mohammed. My problem is if I'm lying down or if I sneeze, I cough and I feel like two of my bones on the left sides lap each other and causes great pain and discomfort, and it takes a while and this pain goes away. Can you let me know what causes this problem?
So I definitely would want to do a few more investigations, because I'm trying to connect the symptoms what you shared there, as in a sneeze and the pain. It depends on where that pain is. Believe it or not, the pressure or the power to which one can sneeze, they say, can even burst a vein or artery in the brain or the heart. So much of intra-abdominal pressure can incur in the body when one sneezes. So don't underestimate the power of a sneeze, okay? Keep in mind that we can avoid the triggers that leads to the sneeze. We can manage that sneeze in particular, or we can look at what's causing the pain at the location of where you say the bones rub. I definitely need to get a little bit more information before I could give you some more advice.
All right, folks, once again, remember you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 99.5 FM. Sangeet 106.1 FM, Sky 99.5 FM, and Vibe City 105 FM. Let's get a question here from Sky. Good afternoon. What can cause your neck to crack every single time you turn your neck? Also experiencing mild pain from time to time.
So that cracking sound that one may hear in the neck when you forcefully either turn it to the side or just kind of spin around is actually where there may be a strain on the muscles and the joints. And as the joints rub against each other, that's when you hear that cracking sound. That can become painful. It can lead to pinched nerves, and it's not something we recommend one does. Definitely, you need to engage in some level of physiotherapy to ease that pain. Sometimes some way feet have a hypermobility where just turning the neck leads to that cracking sound. That's okay. That might be normal. But if it's becoming obtrusive to your day, if it's causing pain, then that's when we need to get it checked out. Hope that answers the question.
All right. Good day, Doc. What can one do to prevent a long period? I'm 49 years old. I went to a gynecologist and he just gave me birth control pills.
Okay. Now, I'm glad that you already went to the doctor. At age 49, you're hitting that perimenopausal time. So the cycles really vary. It can indeed go longer days or it can be shorter days. I'm glad that you're already on some level of treatment, which is the oral contraceptive pill, because that will certainly help balance out the hormones. If you're not satisfied with that helping, then you can have two options. Either you turn to that exact doctor or you seek a second opinion. But the first line of treatment will be the oral contraceptive pills, just to balance out the hormonal changes. Hope that answers your question.
All right, good afternoon, doctor. Pleasant good day. I am 48 years of age and I did a PSA which showed a reading of 0.347. If this has a class of a good reading, should I still proceed to do my annual prostate digital examination?
So what I can tell you is that a normal prostate level or your PSA level, there must be a digit behind it. There must be a value behind it, right? So the 0.3, it really doesn't give me enough meat. The normal PSA level is 4 nanograms per milliliter. And anything under or less than 4 ng/mL is considered normal. So I'm presuming that 0.3 is also nanograms per milliliter. So then that's considered normal. You don't need to proceed to another investigation.
All right, thank you, doctor. Is an echogram reading estimated ejection function is 77%. Is that good result? Also, what is diastolic dysfunction with impaired relaxation?
Okay, so you definitely had an echo done. I'm glad you did. The ejection fraction says 77%. However, you have some other complications there. What I don't know is if that echo is post-heart attack, post-surgery, post-recovery, rehabilitation, or even before the heart attack. So it really, we don't ever treat a reading or a blood value or an investigation. We treat the patient. So it depends on what the situation is, what the presenting symptoms are, and the timelines. Yes, that's something I definitely want to get checked out. The ejection fraction 77 is not bad at all. But like I said, it really depends on if it's post heart attack or before. Hope that answers the question.
All right, Doc, we have just about 10 minutes. Let's talk a little bit about World Asthma Day today and get into our Health Plus.
Oh, definitely. And I'm really glad we were able to give this attention to World Asthma Day. What, first and foremost, are the signs and symptoms what may see? So we already kind of discussed what causes it. One may have a shortness of breath. What is shortness of breath? You will feel your respiratory rate increase. You might even feel around the neck. You're using the muscles of the neck. You're feeling this chest tightness. You may feel like you need to cough. It can be a dry cough. It can be a wet cough. And then most importantly, you may hear a wheeze. That wheeze is like a rattling sound. However, in severe attacks, the person is so exhausted, there may not even be the strength to wheeze. So when one is not wheezing, that does not mean it's not an asthmatic attack. Now, in the early question, someone asked if asthma is hereditary or not. Yes, if parents have asthma, chances of the child having asthma is very high. And it's important that we not only be checked out early, but know how to prevent it. You would see persons having their blue inhaler or the brown inhalers. They're two different forms of medication. One, the blue one, is your bronchodilator. That should be on you all the time. Especially if you're out in the car, outside of the house, just in case there's a trigger. So what can trigger this asthmatic attack? From environmental factors, chemical pollutants, pollen, dust mite, mold, pet dander, even exercise can trigger an asthmatic attack. And even one's emotions. In fact, in the last 3 years, there was an increased amount of asthmatic attacks because of stress and anxiety and depression. So keep in mind, these things can trigger. And in our Guardian, we also looked at that management plan. It's so important we have a good idea of not only knowing what the triggers are, but how to treat. So you're already experiencing these signs and symptoms. Make sure you get it checked out, please. In your Guardian, we did a full management plan. And to all those who are asthmatics, the American Lung Association have openly shared a free training course. All you need to Google is American Lung Association Asthma Basics. This is a program for all persons, parents of those with asthma, caregivers, school nurses, teachers, healthcare professionals, even community leaders, to help persons better know about asthma and treat asthma. In this last year, WHO said something like 400,000 persons died with asthma, and the numbers are only going to keep going up. That's something that's preventable. So despite this rising prevalence of asthma, we need to be able to know how to diagnose it, how to treat it, but most importantly, how to prevent it.
And what about our children with asthma? Can children be born with asthma? How do parents cope with children with asthma?
Yeah, they aren't necessarily born with asthma. They tend to present around age 2, 1.5, and that's because of the genetic factors and, of course, the environmental factors. With our children, we may have had to adjust the living environment, switch out carpets. If there's a pet, that pet dander can trigger it as well. Adjust the linens as well and ensure that they learn how to use the inhaler. Now, a 2-year-old certainly can't do that puff and inhale at the same time. So there's a device called a spacer that we teach the parents in the health centers, in the clinics, in the hospital, how to use the spacer with the puff. So yes, our children can present with asthma, even the adults.
All right, let's return back to our questions. Yes, we have about 6 more minutes to go. Let's go to the phone lines. Hello, welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hello.
Yes, you're live on air. Your question is?
Yes, hello, sir. Go ahead with your question. Hello? Oh, we seem to have lost them there. All right, sorry about that, sir. Good day, doctor. Is a PSA of 0.5 good or bad?
So, one person asks 0.3, another one asks 0.5. Again, we need to know the unit. Anything under 4 ng/milliliters. So 4 ng/milliliter is considered normal. So yes, if it's 0.5 ng/milliliters, then yes, it's normal.
But if somebody does have a sort of a abnormal or a little bit of a high PSA reading, does that necessarily mean cancer or more tests should be done?
Absolutely. So good question. No. A high or elevated PSA level does not equate right away cancer. You can have just the prostate gland itself being enlarged. There's something called BPH, benign prostatic hyperplasia, and that will also trigger an elevated PSA right after sex. That can also trigger PSA levels being increased. If one just went to do an exam and there is that manipulation of the prostate gland, then that will also trigger the PSA. That's why it's so important that we know when you do the test. Some persons do the test right afterwards, and then that's a false elevated reading. So an elevated reading does not equate cancer. It is in conjunction with what the signs and symptoms are.
All right, great. About that, 4 more minutes to go. 627-3223, 625-2257. Once again, folks, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangi 106.1 FM, Sky 99.5, and the Vibe City 105 FM. Our WhatsApp number is 306-1065. Good day, Doc. My grandson will be 3 in December, but is not speaking. All right, not speaking.
Okay, so at age 3, we definitely need to get a pediatric check. When you say not speaking, I need to know if your grandson has a few words, if he's saying a few words and then stringing those together. So that we definitely do a deeper evaluation on what does that not speaking include. We not only look at the speaking, we look at the amount of words that they can recall, the amount of what's their vocabulary like, and then we look at their motor movements, both fine motor with their fingers and of course their general generalized motor. So we do an overall developmental assessment. A pediatrician will do that at 3 years, definitely at the next appointment or even schedule one. Make sure this is checked earlier rather than later.
You know, in Trinidad, a lot of parents like to think, well, now he's a late bloomer, late speaker. You know, it should definitely be checked out early as possible.
So here's, let me jump into that one very quickly.
Yeah.
That is a statement that I hear way too often and gets me very, very annoyed.
Me too.
Because then that means you're already holding back an intervention for your child.
Mm-hmm.
If what we do know is that from as young as 2 years, they already should have certain words of vocabulary. They should be certainly using a two-word sentence, three-word sentence. And by 3 years, their vocabulary should be a little bit more.
Yeah.
If there's those missed milestones, intervention can happen early to prevent delay later on. We can pick up global delay or specific delays from earlier on, and that's why the early baby checks are so important. Let's not, I've heard this statement often, well, his uncle didn't speak until he was four, so he probably is just a late bloomer, but that delay would lead to some other symptom later on. It could be the start of autism. It could be the start of autism spectrum disorder or some other delay in terms of a neurodiverse treatment. So let's make sure we pick it up early and identify it early.
All right, great. Let's get our final question inside. 627-3223-625-2257. Of course, the lunchtime doctor for today, Tuesday, and WhatsApp 3065. Hello, good afternoon. Final caller.
Good afternoon. People in the village, they are burning plastic bottles like chowy and foam material. But I think this is dangerous. Chemicals look bad for asthma people, and it should educate the people. Well, the guardian and...
Yes. Thank you so... Can you tell me which village it is?
Hello?
Check him off. I'm glad you told me. I hope those persons are listening. Mm-hmm. Please do not burn the plastics. That gives off a solvent, a chemical in the air, and it's very harmful to everyone, not just asthmatics. It's harmful to all who would breathe that in or inhale it. There's several ways now to dispose of our plastics. In just about every grocery, there's a recyclable bin to have your plastics. Just bag it and put it separate and make sure you dispose of it in the grocery. Hope that answers the question.
All right, thank you very much, Doc. That'll be it for today, so catch you tomorrow.
We answered quite a lot of questions. Thanks
yes.
so much, Bass. Welcome back.
Thank
and
you.
Of course, have a pleasant afternoon to all that tuned in and enjoy. Stay locked into Freedom.
All right, of course, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor. That was the Lunchtime Doctor. Right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, also heard on Sangeet 106.1, Sky 99.5, and the Vibe City 105 FM. Catch us tomorrow from 12 noon till 1 p.m. and do enjoy the rest of your day.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.